After Brexit, many people are still trying to come to terms with the shock result. Some are saying on social media that there is a racist element to the anti-immigration feeling. But former Foreign Minister Bob Carr, currently the director of the UTS China Relations Institute, says that 300,000 new immigrants each year was simply too much for the small British island to bear, and that this was the message it had to stop. Meanwhile, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn is in all sorts of trouble following the Brexit referendum, and Catherine Zengara asked Bob Carr whether he should just step down from the British Labour leadership now.
I don't think he was ever a viable Labour leader. You've got to appeal to the middle of politics. You can only implement the reforms you can persuade a majority of the electorate to accept by putting you into government. And he was, in my view, Corbyn was colossally compromised by the positions, the far-left positions he'd taken in the past. You're never going to be able to persuade the British electorate to accept him as a Prime Minister.
He was in a difficult position, though, wasn't he, in regard to the Brexit, because he had a similar split in his own party as the split in the Tories, in that there were people who were in favour of staying with the EU, but there were also people who reflected that concern of the voters, the ones who wanted out.
Yeah, with his Labour voters, he's in that position. But a majority of his party, I think an overwhelming majority of his parliamentary party, and I think it can be assumed a majority of his party membership, were in favour of the official party position that Britain stays in the EU.
But there's that strong sense of people who felt very disenfranchised by the EU, that it was a reaction against austerity, and that is something that he was taking a moral stand, if you like, against.
Yeah, to be fair, it wasn't a reaction against austerity that was motivating them. All the indications are it was a reaction to immigration.
On the surface of it, and that's very apparent in some of the reactions that we've seen, the attacks, the racist attacks over the last number of days. But there are a number of key commentators who have said that actually people felt that they wanted not so much out of the EU, but out of an economic system that's left them behind.
Yeah, no, I got to take issue with that. And it's you can't dismiss the concerns about immigration by referring to recent racist attacks. A large part of working class England without any sense of racism was saying it's the numbers. The numbers are too high. As a result of very high levels of immigration, historically high, hugely overambitious, migrants arriving from the EU, they saw wages being depressed. They saw huge additional pressures on public services. They saw congestion in areas that were ill-equipped to take a steep rise in numbers. And without racism, they were saying it's the numbers, stupid. It is the sheer weight of numbers. They saw downward pressure on wages. Downward pressure on wages. That flow of ununionised labour from the continent, prepared to sign up to unskilled jobs, part-time jobs, meant downward pressure on the wage incomes of people in the workforce. There were studies that confirmed an old truth, and that is high immigration, overambitious levels of immigration, provide no economic benefit for your existing population.
But
there's
agree,
no economic
do
gain.
Do you agree, though, that racism tends to go up when there is pressure on jobs? Historically,
yeah,
we've seen that.
I'd need to think about that, but it's not racism. We've got to get this into our heads. It wasn't racism. It was a large part of the British population saying, look, for 15 years, we've been trying to tell Westminster that 300,000 arrivals a year, I think that was what it got up to, is too much for our congested island. It's too much. And Tony Blair and others ignored it. David Cameron was elected talking, if I'm not mistaken, about getting it down to arrivals of something like 30,000 a year to enable Britain to catch up, infrastructure to catch up, jobs to catch up. He comprehensively failed. That was his biggest broken promise. And the electorate said in the end, look, you're not taking us seriously. We're going to vote for exit. And the biggest issue was immigration. The biggest issue was immigration. Britain's done reasonably well economically, but not because of immigration, despite immigration. There is no study that confirms high immigration lifts the living standards of your
Okay, but do you agree that there was an association with the EU and the notion of austerity, even if some sort of austerity or neoliberal measures had been opposed by Britain's own government?
Yes,
that weren't necessarily EU measures.
Yeah, but I don't see that as a bigger factor than immigration. There is no evidence, there's no poll, there's no feedback that suggests that came anywhere near to rivaling immigration as an issue of concern. They were saying not only is it depressing our wages, not only is it crowding out already crowded urban areas, not only is it putting pressure on the National Health Service, but migrants are coming here from poorer EU countries and, under the rules, going straight onto Social Security. And that has always been a trigger. More than concern about austerity in West European countries, Austria, for example, that has always, or Scandinavia, Denmark, Holland, that has always been the trigger that's produced a backlash. When people who think that in our countries we've built up a generous social security system, we've done it through our battles, our struggles, the work of the labour movement over 100 years, we've got these things, but huge numbers of migrants are crowding in from outside, and without having made a contribution, they're getting these benefits, and no one seems to be listening to us. It's that frustration that produced that big, surprisingly big no vote that got Brexit over the line.
There are concerns about the Eurozone collapsing, especially if another country, that there's going to be some kind of domino effect and that another country, maybe Italy or Finland, chooses to leave. If that is the case, do you agree with some assessments that Britain and China will need to brace themselves for a deflation shock?
We just don't know. I mean, it's just as credible to think that the system, the Eurozone, might struggle on and get by. We just don't know. All I can say is, as someone who's working at UTS on the Australia-China relationship, thank God we've got China.
But any shock to China flowing on from the Brexit is going to impact on us hugely, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And the Chinese view is very consistent. They want world growth. They need world growth.
What Yanis Varoufakis, the former Greek finance minister, has said is that even if there isn't a collapse of the EU itself, that austerity measures by themselves, whether they're imposed by sovereign governments or by an EU in a similar situation to what happened in Greece, where we saw the EU have a veto over national budgets, that itself will impose deflationary pressures in Britain. So Britain is going to face huge economic problems coming out of this.
Well, the problems are going to be bigger because of the uncertainty projected in all directions. If you were running a finance company, all your business European, from London, are you going to shift to Frankfurt or to Amsterdam? There are a lot of companies making that sort of decision these days. That sector is rich with jobs. Then that's a load of uncertainty. All you'd need would be one manufacturer, for example, a serious manufacturer with, say, 10,000 employees, very precious these days, in a developed country, to make a decision to relocate, and blaming it on Brexit, I think, to produce an extra wave of uncertainty. My challenge to the former Greek minister is this. I hear what you're saying. I agree with you about the failure of austerity. But on the way through, give yourself extra credibility by also saying that for the Greeks to have had a government that said, we're in the Eurozone, but we're going to lay up debt, we're going to have public service inefficiencies like you've never heard of, we're going to run pensions more generous than the German pensions and pay our public sector workforce more than the Dutch workforce, was just untenable. If I hear him say that in his next interview on Philip Adams, I'll regard with more credibility his warnings about austerity. But I've never heard him criticise what I think was the profoundly irresponsible drift of Greek policy making for decades.
He was in favour of Britain actually remaining in the EU.
I know.
But a radically different model.
Yes.
A model where Britain's government, I guess, pushed back against those kind of austerity measures that we've seen the German government push forward.
Yeah, that's fine. And I'm happy to entertain a debate with him about its viability. And I share his criticisms of austerity. but nonetheless, here's the challenge. If other governments think they can be in the Eurozone and spend like Greek politicians did for decades, running a rail system that loses so much money, for example, paying pensions and teachers' wages more generous than those in Germany, running everything as a protected enclave for privileged public sector workers, and not thinking about the burden on the Greek taxpayers, not thinking about the non-payment of taxes that was just hugely widespread in Greece. Unless in his next interview he faces up to that, I'll cease to take him as a serious commentator.
Yes, so Bob Carr's not taking anything seriously unless he has to. Former Foreign Minister there, Director of the UTS China Relations Institute, Bob Carr, speaking with Catherine Zengara.